Well, good morning, KRFY listeners, and I'm Susie Prez. Thanks for tuning in to your community radio station this morning. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. This is Local Decision 2024 primary, and today we'll be talking with candidate Catherine Larson, running in the May primary for District 1, House Seat B, as a Democrat, currently held by Sage Dixon, who is not running again. Her opponent is Bob Vicarious. And I have a recorded interview with Bob that will be aired after we get a chance to talk with Catherine. So stay with us all the whole hour. This is the morning show. It is Local Decision 2024 primary. And so we're going to get right to it. Again, good morning, Catherine Larson, and thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Susie. Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's start with an introduction. You are running again, let's just say this, for House Seat B in District 1 as a Democrat.
That is correct.
Okay. And we're just going to find out about you. We want our listeners and our voters to be informed. That's our goal. So first, let's start with a little introduction for the voters. Tell a bit about your background, how long you have lived here, and how you wound up in North Idaho.
Yes, well, I've been here since 2015. We bought in 2012. We had been coming up here since I met my husband, who is a lifelong North Idaho Spokane resident. His parents bought a lot on Priest Lake in 1956 for $1,000 from the Diamond Match Company, and my husband spent his lifetime building a cabin by hand and working in the mills. And so when we met, he introduced me to the Northwest and North Idaho, and we fell in love and wanted to move up here. So here we are. I've spent time all around the world, and this is where I want to be.
Where did you come from before you came here, and how long have you been here?
2015 is when we moved, and we came from Golden, Colorado. That's where we raised our kids. But I grew up all over the place. I moved 11 times before I got to high school, so I feel connected here.
Right, and as you say, your husband was basically raised here, at least in the summertime.
Yep.
So why don't we hear a little bit about your experience and what kind of the things in your background that might qualify you to hold office?
So from an education standpoint, I have a degree in geology, and I was offered a free ride after geology to go back and get my master's degree, and I started off on that. My mother passed away very suddenly, and I ended up leaving grad school and going on to be a mountain guide, and ended up years later when my children were young. So I ended up raising kids, three children in a household that was below the poverty line, and so I learned a little bit about what it's like to struggle and what it's like to seek help. I was able to get a loan for women going back to college, and went back to get my master's degree in organizational development and a teaching certificate combined, but was asked to offered a job right at 7 hours short and ended up taking that position. And so I didn't finish that degree, but I learned what I needed to learn and then went on.
So any trade or professional associations or nonprofit groups that you belong to that are only pertinent to holding office?
Well, I don't know if they're pertinent. I'm part of POP. Pondere Peddlers.
Okay.
And the Community Action League, which runs Bazaar Bazaar, and I'm on the scholarship committee there. So we're looking at giving scholarships to deserving high school students, and I'm super excited about that. And I'm also part of Idaho Trails Association, so I do some trail work, not much, but a little bit. And I'm also part of Artworks Gallery, which is not technically a nonprofit, but we're a co-op, and all the money goes to the artists, and so I'm involved with that.
Well, thank you for sharing your background a little bit. When you're talking about hiking and things like that, and geology as a background, well, you're here in the Gem State, so.
Yeah, I did want to, after I kind of started in the beginning of my background, I think the most relevant elements to my background are that I co-founded a technology business in the early days of the internet, and we built one of the first software as a service platforms, won a bunch of international awards, and then ended up going through the 2001 9/11. And so we went through that crash. So I've got a PhD in business, as my father says, gotten the hard way.
By experience.
Yep. And then I was a consultant with a lot of organizations around the world working in the, you know, to help them with their most difficult problems and transformations. So I've worked in boardrooms with people who don't get along and don't agree.
A spectrum of humanity.
Yep.
So the next question, really, why are you running? What is pulling you into taking this on?
So I believe that the citizens of North Idaho are not being represented currently. The elected officials now seem to be focused more on getting their ideological efforts put forward instead of listening to the people who live here. And I believe that people need to be represented. I believe that we need to be focused on local issues, things that really matter here, and on ensuring that we have the freedom to live the way we want to live in North Idaho, to let our kids read the books they want to read. And I believe that we need to focus on spurring our economic ecosystem here. We've got really wonderful family-owned businesses, small and mid-sized businesses, and we need to invigorate that economy, and we need to invigorate the middle class that's here, and that's not what I see our legislators focusing on.
Well, thank you for that. Another kind of more on who you are question. The legislature typically is in session from January through March, although they're still in session now. They extended it. I'm pretty sure it's still going.
Yes.
But if elected, you must represent your constituents year-round, which raises the question, if elected, how much time will you devote to your office on a weekly basis?
So for me, I think it's less about time, and it's more about being available and listening and working when it's necessary. I'm an all-in kind of person, so I'm here to do the job, and I will give it the time that it needs, but I don't want to put this is the way I've worked my whole life. If it takes 60 hours, I'll put in 60 hours. If it takes 20 hours, I'll put in 20 hours.
So you'll be engaged?
Yes.
Okay. So now we're going to get to some more general questions. What do you consider the biggest issues? You kind of alluded to this all a little bit. The biggest issues in the House race that you would like voters to consider? You mentioned economic growth here at home, but that's an open question.
So I think one of them certainly is healthcare. You know, we've lost our obstetric care here, and I think that we need to, our OBGYN care, and that affects women at all ages, and it also affects families, you know. And so I think that that's one of the things that we need to address. Our public schools, they're underfunded. We're putting out levies. The facilities, we need to fund public education. We need to make it healthy. And I see that as a huge local issue. Affordable housing, you know, we've got to begin to address how do we allow people to live here locally to work. And these are all economic issues as well, because you can't attract young families in if you don't fix those things. And then finally, we've got an aging infrastructure. You know, our sewers, our waters, our roads, they're aging, and we haven't been investing, and we're experiencing this huge growth. And we've got to be thinking about how to do that in a way that doesn't just increase taxes.
Well, thank you. It may not be quite over the legislature, but what kind of grade would you give the legislature overall for this session so far, and why?
So I would give them a C, and that might actually be generous. The issues they're spending their time on, like, you know, one example that's been gotten a lot of news is this cannibalism bill. But you know what? That went over 3 months. They reread it, rewrote it, voted on it. They're spending time on those kinds of things. And yet, when we have real issues like our health care, we can't get them to spend any time. You know, they just turned down $163 million that was federal, our share of federal money from our taxes that will now go to other states because our legislators chose to turn it away out of some principle. And that was for feeding hungry children. So I feel like they're not focusing on the right things. They're repeatedly introducing new bills about things that have gotten voted down. Like, we've had multiple bills on the library. The people are very much not for that. And yet they keep bringing it back and keep bringing it back. The shenanigans and the gamesmanship where they'll introduce one bill and then they'll bring in a second bill that's materially different but looks the same and race it in ahead of time. I feel like it's not transparent and it's difficult. And then the way the Idaho Freedom Foundation tells them to check boxes and vote in a particular way, I'm not happy.
So you're not feeling like maybe a C is generous. Okay. Well, let's get to a few of those key bills that you're talking about. A link to Idaho Statesman Bill Tracker with links off to more info on all of these 70-plus bills. You can go to idahostatesman.com, and there's a whole long thing. But I think if you go there, you can find the link to the bill tracker. So let's get to a couple of these. On Friday, Governor Brad Little signed House Bill 52, sweeping legislation under which Idaho will spend an additional $1.5 billion over the next decade to help fund building construction and maintenance for schools around the state. Would you have supported or opposed this bill?
So I would have supported it. I don't know that it goes far enough. I feel like we're still underfunding. We had the big initiative several years ago through Reclaim Idaho to get more funding for education, and the legislature has still refused to fully fund. So I would have supported that. I don't know all of the details of what I might have agreed on or not, but yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, concealed guns in schools. House Bill 415 would allow public school employees with concealed weapon permits to bring concealed firearms to school grounds, that's employees. The House passed the bill, which has been referred to the Senate State Affairs Committee. How would you, and then there's a second bill, bill number 1418, which aims to replace the House bill that we just mentioned, and would allow local entities to impose stricter firearm training requirements if they choose to. It's been referred to the Senate Affairs Committee. Would you favor or oppose if this came before the House?
I would absolutely oppose it. And I have to say that I am critical of the legislatures for being ideological. So this is not ideologically based on my belief about guns, although I do have beliefs. This is about the bill that 415 that came out was critically flawed. It allowed anyone who chose to carry a gun to carry a gun, didn't allow administrators or parents or school boards to be able to contradict it. And so that was one piece. It also had no accountability. If they shot someone accidentally, there was no accountability. And so we're just letting anybody who wants to carry a gun inside of our schools with our children without adequate training. So opposed to it, the Senate bill that tried to fix it put Band-Aids on it. But putting Band-Aids on a flawed bill is not a way to fix a flawed bill. You just need to start over again. And again, this is a local issue. We've got school boards that are locally elected. We have parents. We have teachers. This is an issue that we should be deciding locally.
And as it stands now, because neither one of these two bills, the fix-it bill and the original 415, as it stands now, it is up to the school boards to, and there must be a state law about firearms in schools.
There doesn't need to be a state law about firearms. That's what I'm saying.
Leave it to the districts.
The districts already have the ability to set those things up. Most school districts have already worked through this ad nauseum, and now the state is coming in and saying, we don't care what you've done over the last 5 years. We want to impose what we just thought up in a really bad bill, and it's going to lead to lawsuits, which the taxpayers pay for. This is a local issue. We need to address it locally.
Okay. Well, thank you. House Bill 710 would allow lawsuits for uncapped civil damages after a parent provides 30 days written notice to a library asking them to move a, in quotations, what they consider harmful book to an adult-only section. The bill has been passed by the House and sent to the Senate floor. Would you agree with this or oppose it?
Absolutely not. I can tell you how, I can't tell you how many letters I've written this year during the legislative session against the many, many, many bills they keep bringing up about the library. We had locally, Susan Shea was challenged in our library, and the people of Bonner County came out unequivocally against letting the extremists take over our library. Already, parents have the ability to screen what their children read. We have board members that are locally elected. The libraries already have processes in place. There are not complaints. I was talking to one of the board members, and she said, I think we've had one complaint in 5 years about a book in the library. So this is not an issue. This is an example of something that's been brought in from out of state into Idaho. It's not a problem here, and yet it keeps being brought up over and over. And I hear the legislators say, you know, we're thinking about passing this library bill because it's the least bad one that's come along, which I think is irresponsible. We need to just say, leave our libraries alone. We have locally elected boards. We have experts in our library. It's a vibrant, active part of our community. And to distract these people from the great work that they're doing, sending out bookmobiles, creating volunteer programs, creating a rich after-school program, do we want them really to take all of that time that they're focused on really positive things for our community and do something that the state, driven by out-of-state influences, is requiring us to do when we've already done all of the things that are necessary?
Right. So what you're saying is there's already things in place, protection in place for children. And I think you said it in the very beginning, parents can be with their children and see what they're reading if it's an issue. I think, but also in the secondary, the library is astute in what mm-hmm. is appropriate and isn't appropriate and available, is what you're saying.
I was talking to one of the librarians over in Clark Fork, and she said, if this passes, we're going to have to hire someone to check IDs at the door, because anyone under 18 can sue you if you let them out the door with a book that their parents don't want.
Well, okay. So that's where you stand on that. The next thing is private militias. Senate Bill 1240 would eliminate Idaho's prohibition on private militias. Currently, it's got to be brought, if there's a militia, it's the governor brings it together. It's been referred to as Senate State Affairs Committee, this bill. It may or may not come to the House. How would you vote on it?
I would vote no. I don't understand why we would be doing this. It feels intimidating and unnecessary.
So it's a no.
It's a no.
Okay. Let's get to the What is Your Position on Open Primaries initiative, which would end Idaho's closed Republican primary so that all voters, regardless of party affiliation, could vote in a primary election. They would just choose at the poll. It would also allow voters to rank candidates in order of preference. That is still in my mind. I'm trying to figure that one out a little bit, but there's great explanations. The group organizing this initiative are collecting signatures to get it on the ballot, and if successful, voters will get to vote for or against it on November. What's your position on open initiatives, primaries?
I have to say, I feel like this is a true example of the people making their voices heard. There is absolutely no doubt that open primaries makes elections fair. Frankly, as a Democrat, not having open primaries may make it easier for me to make it to the general, but I support open primaries 100% because it's a fair way to give people votes. As far as the ranked choice voting, that they're making that sound more confusing than it is. Basically, if you have a first and a second choice, you can say, this is my first and second choice. If you only have a first choice, you say, this is the first choice. And it's there is no question about the fact that this allows more fair voting. It doesn't allow the parties to manipulate the vote, either party.
Right. I always come back to one statement. I want my vote to count.
Yep.
And if there is no one on the Democratic side or the Republican side, whichever I'm affiliated with, then I would want another option. So that's how I look at that. Let's get anyone out there voting.
And if we look at just this election this year with House seat 1B and 1A and the Senate race, if we had open primaries, you would be able to vote on all of these candidates in November.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a more general question. The legislature has weighed over 70 bills this session so far. Are there other than we've talked about, other specific bills you want to mention as supporting or opposing?
So it's, you know, there are so many. I've been, like I said, I get up every morning and look at what's going through and what's going to be heard in the House, and I'm trying to educate myself before I get down there to understand what's going on. So there are a lot that I don't want to go through listing, but the tendency, I think one of the key things is this tendency to introduce two similar bills to kind of fool people and stick one in front of the other one. The maternal mortality board was a great example of that, where we had a bill that brought the right people into the room, nurse midwives. A lot of people really understood prenatal and birthing. And then at the last minute, they pulled another bill in front of it that put it into a different group, and a different group is deciding. You know, that kind of shenanigans, I really don't like to see. I like the bringing the ideological bills back and back and back and back until people wear down and finally vote. And then the JFAC rule changes are very, very concerning to me, because what that does is it gives line item veto power to our politicians to dive down into the inner workings of agencies. And as I said, I've worked with a lot of big organizations, and anytime you dive down and micromanage the different groups or the different departments, you cut off their ability to do their best work. And so that's really concerning. One example of that was that they just line item vetoed out the lunch program for students that would have cost us next to nothing, and they just wiped it out to not feed hungry kids. And all of that money is just, now we're subsidizing other states. So it's not like they did a great thing for us. They just took the money that was our share and gave it to other states.
So this was federal money that could have come into Idaho. Do you have any idea why they voted that out?
Well, what they said was, it sends the wrong message. People need to work for what they get. And that goes along with another bill that was introduced this year that was allowing for child labor. And it was saying, now we want to remove all our child labor laws. You only have to track it from 14 to 16, but anyone under 14 can work and you don't have to track it. So maybe they want to send all our children to work to get their food if they don't have enough money.
So that one didn't make sense to you?
Didn't make any sense.
So that one's done and gone. There's no bringing it back.
I did receive an email saying, let's write our senators and tell them that we're unhappy with that. So it did get struck out, and it was in the paper. But, you know, they're still in session, so maybe there's a way.
Okay, well, we'll find out. And so that's kind of a review of what's kind of going on in the legislature right now and has been since January. Politics has gotten more polarized in recent years. Do you see a way to find common ground among your constituents if elected? And how will you go about representing those constituents that may have different ideas and viewpoints?
So I think that different ideas and viewpoints often come from a similar place. You know, like when someone tells me that they want guns in the classroom, that tells me that they're afraid. They're afraid for their kids going to school. And I think we do need to be free from fear. So I think it's if we can leave our ideological, hard, uncompromising places and try to get to what the real source of the issue is and work through things. I've worked in a lot of boardrooms with not even boardrooms. I've worked with organizations between unions and management, in mergers, people with completely different mindsets. And when it comes down to it, we all typically want the same things if you can get down to the root of it enough. We are fiercely independent in Idaho. We're hardworking. We may have different belief systems, but when our neighbor is in trouble, we are there. And I see that. I see that in my neighborhood. We'll drop everything. And so I'll try to listen to the words of what the fear or belief system is that's behind what's driving it and get to a solution that is consistent with the values of the people who live here, because I truly don't believe they're that different.
So what I'm hearing you saying is that if you do the hard work, you can always find common ground.
Absolutely.
And work from that place. But the work ahead of all that is difficult. But I also heard you say, listen to each other.
And love and respect each other. You know, that's the thing. I think oftentimes we go at it with our dukes up. I think of the Dr. Seuss book where the two yaks are in the middle of the desert and they just won't let each other pass. And if we can see beyond to the person instead of the fists that are up, I think we can get to common ground. And that's been my experience in life.
Well, that brings us to a question. What differentiates you from as a candidate? Why should people vote for you?
Well, I think I'm a problem solver. So first I have to say is I don't know Bob. I like him already, knowing that he's out calving. But, I care deeply about this place. I'm sure that other people do as well. I believe that my experience and my expertise has brought me to a moment both understanding the system from the inside and also having experience in fixing broken systems. I believe that I will bring that to bear. And I believe that I can be objective. I'm very authentic. So I will always be honest, as honest as I will always tell you what I believe, if you ask.
If you ask. Okay, last word, Catherine. By the way, this is the local decision 2024 primary interview with Catherine Larson. And Catherine, the last word, how can people weighing how they might want to vote, find out more about you? Do you have websites, social media, however
Yes.
you want to connect with the voters and the people trying to find out?
So I have a website, CatherineLarsonForIdaho.com. And on that is a link to my Facebook and my Instagram. And I've even tweeted once. I'm starting to get more active on social media, so it's coming. It's hard for me, but I'm working on it.
So give us that website again.
Catherine, Kathryn, Larson with an O, foridaho.com.
Okay. And link to Facebook, Instagram, and all of that.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm sure you're open to talking to people. I just want to remind our listeners that there is a candidates forum hosted by The Reader, Keoki, or Sandpoint Online, and KRFY on the 30th of April, and that will be at the public high school. So keep that in mind and look for dates and more information about that with times. Catherine, I just want to thank you for coming in. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. And I also want to remind the listeners that you can listen to this podcast, this interview as a podcast at krfy.org later in the day. We'll have it up on our website. So
thanks.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for coming in.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Susie.
We're going to take a little song break and then come back to Bob Vicarious's interview that I was able to do yesterday via phone.